financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I'm good. I feel like we've not seen each other for a little bit, but we're back in action.
It's true. How was your vacation?
It was good. A couple of days off, and that's always nice. A little bit of a staycation, you know.
Yeah. This is what happens when you're in radio, right?
Somebody else
might cover some things, but not enough. So while you were gone, I got some phone calls, a couple of phone calls, about credit card rates. Like, how is this not usury, right? We used to throw that term around, usury. It's actually a biblical term, but we used to throw around the word usury. Like, you can't charge somebody too much money because it's usury. There are usury laws. I think, you know, some people would say loan sharking, right? Mm-hmm. How do you get to charge? How is that legal, people will say? So I did a little digging about how that is legal because it bugs me too, you know, and mm-hmm. I knew some of it, but I will say we'll talk a little bit about the details today, not just about why these interest rates are through the ceiling and how they get away with charging you this,
mm-hmm. yeah.
but what can you do about it? I mean, there are things you can do about this.
Okay.
So I think, you know, we always try to tell you a solution to the problem. As much as I talk about here's the problem and I get on my little rants because I get angry about it, that it just seems unfair to me that you should have to pay that kind of interest rate. And, you know, in defense of the large companies, I always say, well, you know, nobody puts a gun to your head to sign this contract, right? We volunteer to get these credit cards. But the other side of the argument is, you know, you may not know what that rate is going to be until after you've applied, first of all. Mm-hmm. And secondly, rates change. These credit cards have these variable rates. So, you know, you might sign up for something at 0% for a year, or you might sign up for something that had an 8% rate thinking it's always going to stay there, but it's probably linked to some benchmark like Prime or LIBOR or something mm-hmm. like that. So
it always seems like there's fine print too. Like, you might miss where it says, you know, your interest rate's really low, but if you happen to miss a payment or be late, then it jumps to like 27% for the rest of your life with a credit card. You're like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
And they're called, covered.
Yeah. It's called the default rate. And we'll go through what makes that, what triggers that. Because you're absolutely right. You might have a credit card. You always say really intuitive things, Jess. I love having you. So you might have a credit card that's say at 16% and you think, oh, it's really high, but I'm doing okay. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you have this default rate and you're saying, what happened here? And
right.
there's a number of things that can happen. So let's start with that. Why not? We're here. the default rate thing. Okay. So the first thing that can happen is you're late on your payment. Now, there are two different kinds of late when we're talking about late on your payment. The one that everybody thinks, I'm afraid of that because it's going to harm my credit. Mm-hmm. And some people who are very credit conscious say, I don't want to have it pass the grace period because it's going to harm my credit. But it doesn't. The grace period, let's define some of these terms that they love to throw around in the fine print that you talked about. The grace period is the number of days between the due date and the date at which they assess a late fee. Mm-hmm. So let's say that your payment is due on the 1st and you have a 15-day grace period. You're not going to get hit with that late fee until the day of the 16th or 17th, depending on their calendar, right? So they'll apply a late fee for you at that point. For you. They'll apply.
So nice of them. Yeah.
They'll apply a late fee to you.
I picture them gleefully behind their keyboards, like late, but like a little smiley face because they get an extra $15.
Wait, 15. Wow.
Whatever.
That's all. Yeah. 20, 25, 30, $35. Yeah. Some even higher than that. I had somebody the other day say something about they thought it was $45. I'm not even sure that's legal, but maybe it is. If they're charging it, it probably is. And we'll talk about how those things can be legal. But yeah, they assess that late fee and now you owe that on top of your balance. And guess mm-hmm. what? You owe interest on all of that next month. So that's just the late fee period, that grace period. So if you miss your due date and you miss your grace period, they're going to charge that late fee. It doesn't affect your credit until you're 30 days late. So if it's due on the first of this month, on the first of next month, if you still haven't paid it, now they can report you as 30 days delinquent on your credit reports.
And that's good to know, because I think a lot of people correlate, like, if you get a late fee, that automatically means a ding on your credit.
Yeah, and it's not. It's a slap on the wrist and some money out of your wallet, but it's not affecting your credit at that stage. But it will when you get to 30 days late. Now, I could say not everybody reports to the credit reporting bureaus, but pretty much all the national banks, all the credit card companies report to credit reporting bureaus.
Yeah.
So that's one way the default fee can, the default rate can trigger, is that you're late and they want to say, well, they're a high risk. Another way they can trigger it is they can pull your credit reports, because you sign up for this, believe it or not. When you agree to this credit card application, one of the things you're agreeing to is, I'll let you check my credit, soft check my credit anytime you want, basically. And so they can just soft check your credit as a regular check on you to make sure that you're not a high risk candidate. And if they start to see that your debt to income ratio is too high, they can trigger that default rate.
So they can raise the interest rate even that you signed up for if your credit changes in the period that you have the credit card?
Yes.
That totally seems like that shouldn't be legal.
Well, you know, from their side, if you're trying to protect yourself against bad risk, you want to be able to do that.
I guess, but they've already said, like, hey, we think you're worthy of a $5,000 limit based on this, and then they're going to change it in the middle of that? I don't know.
It's not the same as a mortgage, you know, where you, if you get signed up for a mortgage and they have security in your home, for instance, if you don't pay your mortgage, they can collect, you know, they can foreclose on your home.
Yeah.
So it's not the same as that. They have more risk, which is partly why they charge these high interest rates, because honestly, they know some default will happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are all kinds of little things in that fine print you talked about that that cause those rates to go up. If you're delinquent more than two times in a year, they can raise your rate to the default rate. And the default rate could be much higher. Like, let's say that your interest rate on your credit card was capped at 18% for whatever reason, the state law, federal law, whatever it was that capped it at that time in our pretend world of rates right now. And you're delinquent more than two times a year or two times a year. They can just raise it 28-30%, you know. Now, the reason we're talking so loosely about interest rates, and I'm saying my pretend world of 18% cap, is because you would think that your state, right, the state that you live in, would have some laws about how much you could be charged for interest on a credit
card. Yeah, regulations for sure. Yeah.
Well, they do. Some states go by contract law. Some states go by usury laws. But guess what? The Fed has no cap on it.
Okay.
We have no cap on interest rates under the federal law.
That's scary.
I know. Even hearing it come out of my mouth, there's this pause about, what do you mean you have no cap on it? So in 1980, I'm trying to think of what it was. In 1980, the Depository Institutions Deregulation and Monetary Control Act of 1980, DIDMCA for short. Ronald Reagan was president. We had Reaganomics. We had 1980. That law weakened the state usury laws, and said that even if you said that if a credit card was based out of state, right? Like, let's say you're in Massachusetts, but your credit card national bank is based in Delaware or South Dakota.
Yeah,
they can charge you rates based on Delaware or South Dakota.
Yeah, there's always ways around it, so they can charge higher.
There are a lot of exemptions. And so even if your state, like Massachusetts, actually has usury laws in place, and this is a time when I should remind everybody that I'm not an attorney, especially attorneys. If I'm making a mistake, please tell me. Or give me additional information. I would love to hear about this one. This one's fascinating to me. So Massachusetts had those laws in place, and I think it was 18% in Massachusetts. I'm not positive of that, but I'm pretty sure it was 18%. But because of the federal laws, you know, they can charge whatever they want, basically, based on the state they're incorporated in. Now, many national banks, if you look at your credit card statement, you'll see Delaware, South Dakota, Delaware, South Dakota, And what else? Delaware and South Dakota. Because the laws there are so loose about what they can charge. I will say, you know, the attorney general has a consumer guide about this. And if you're at all a geek, or if you're just interested in learning more about this, I'll give this again at the end, but you should check out that guide. It's Attorney General's Guide to Consumer Credit. And there's a phone number too, which is 617-727-8400 that people can call. And I'll give that again at the end so people can take it down. But there's so much to this. And I did say that we would talk about the things that you can do to counteract this. And there are things you can do. But I think it's important to just remember that at a federal level, national banks are, I don't want to say more protected than consumers, but they have a huge lobby and there's a lot of money at stake here. So yeah. If you think about this like a court case, you're going to go up against a national bank in court. How do you think that's going to fare?
Mm-hmm.
First of and all, they can outlive you.
And the hard thing is too, we've talked about this before on previous shows, but when you look at some of those companies that can charge 30% or whatever they want for a really high interest rate, it's usually the people that are desperate for credit or money at that point that are going to get those cards. So I just feel like maybe you don't look at the red flags as hard if you really are in a situation where you need it.
You know, it's an interesting twist because I'm often defensive for my clients, right? For the public, mm-hmm. about this impression that is given to us, the stigma about debt, which is just what you said. The people who are in the most trouble, who are the most desperate, will accept those rates.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to say not quite the case always. In fact, often okay. not the case. And here's what people don't understand. When I talk to people who have no debt or who had lots of money and never had a problem with money, mm-hmm. they often are judgmental about people who get into monetary problems. And they say, well, what were they thinking? Why were they so irresponsible? And well, they just signed their name and bought campers on credit cards. You know, sometimes that's the case, but often it's not the case. And the hard fact here, the hard reality is that if that was really the case, then we would only have people with terrible credit in desperate situations paying high interest rates. And that is not true. We have mm-hmm. well-meaning people who go to work every day, pay their bills, try to save what they can, send their kids to school, try to be a good neighbor, and they're paying these interest rates. And it happens because of what we talked about earlier. It's not the same as your mortgage. You can't rely on it like a fixed rate loan.
Mm-hmm.
These companies have variable rates. So what happens? You know, first of all, if you're really desperate and you have bad credit, you may not be getting approved for that credit card.
Right.
Maybe you will, but it's likely that if you're in that bad of shape, you're not getting that credit card anyway. So it's the middle of the road people. It's the people. I mean, who do you want if you're a national bank? You want people who are going to pay their bills, who can tolerate it when you jump that rate to 30%. And in the second half, we should go into how credit card companies design their minimum payments, because it isn't necessarily tied to that interest rate. So what happens, Jess, is that you get people who are well-meaning, who take on a credit card because they need to, or they find mm-hmm. it a good idea to do. And they maybe accept a 15% interest rate, let's say, and they're chugging along just fine. And then bam, something happens and they miss a payment. They miss two payments, right? In
mm-hmm.
the year.
Yeah.
And it defaults to that rate. And now they're stuck with that balance at a new 36% rate or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that happens to people. And then because the rate is so high and the payment is so low, because of the way they're not tied together, which we'll talk about, that's where you start to get into the quicksand. So it really isn't, in my opinion, in my experience, it's not about, you know, poor money management at the beginning, taking on a credit card with a high interest rate.
All right, I've got a couple questions on that for you, and we'll have much more. But first, I want to get your phone number.
Sure, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be right back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Tired of juggling your finances? Your HUG financial coach can help. HUG Your Money, so unique,
It's patented. For more information, visit hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Okay, Jess. So, you know, when I thought to myself this morning, we're going to talk about credit card interest rates, I thought, is this really an interesting topic? And then I decided whether it's interesting or not, it's valuable. People need to hear why this happens, what they can do about it. And so I promise you, we won't close this show without giving you some specific things you can do about it and some details on it. But before the break, I mentioned we should talk about how these credit card companies calculate their minimum payments.
Mm-hmm. It's not based on the balance?
It's based on the balance, but most people think it's based on the interest rate. So they think when my interest rate is higher, my payment is going to go up. Well, that would be logical. That's the way most loans work, right? If you had a variable rate mortgage and your interest rate goes up, so does your payment.
Right.
Okay. But credit card companies, as I love that we call them credit card companies. You know what? These are banks. Some different company that issues a credit card. These are the same banks giving you your mortgages and your automobile loans, but now they're charging you for credit cards. Mm-hmm. And we separate that so that we don't blame them psychologically. I don't want to get my loan from a bank. I want to get it from a bank. I don't want to get it from a credit card company. Same thing.
Same thing. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest about it. They're national banks. Mm-hmm. A good example is Chase. You can get a mortgage from Chase. You can get a car loan. You can get a credit card, right? It's a national bank. Okay. So, but I like to refer to them as my little cuties. These credit card companies, these little cuties, they love to do things a certain way. And one of the things they do that is so dangerous for people and why we say stay out of credit card debt or get out of credit card debt if you can is this. All right. When your interest rate goes up, let's take a credit card with a $10,000 balance. Okay. When you sign up, let's say it's a 0% rate. Let's just make things simple. It's 0%. Okay. You sign up for a $10,000 credit card and you get your bill in and it says your minimum payment is $200. Okay. So you pay $200. Mm-hmm. That is basically, well, not basically, it's exactly 2% of your balance, right? There's no interest rate on it. It's zero. 2% of $10,000 is $200. Okay. Let's suppose the interest rate jumps up because of one of the things we're talking about, or just that, you know, they've reviewed the account and the interest rates are going up. Maybe the interest rate expires, the 0% rate expires, and now you're at prime plus whatever. When you're enrolling for these cards, it'll tell you that. You're going to go prime plus whatever. So let's say prime is at 3% and they're going to add 12% to it. Okay. So now your interest rate jumps from 0 to 15%. Your payment may or may not go up from $200.
And but only so much is going towards the principal, right? And the other is going towards interest?
Yes. And if it does, it may go up slightly. So for example, that same $10,000 balance with a $200 payment on it at 0% might now have a 15% interest rate, but your payment might be $220, $225.
Okay.
So this is where it gets dangerous because what happens is, of course, what you said. Now more money is going to interest, less to principal. And if you start to look at an amortization schedule, which is fancy talk for the schedule of how each payment is broken down over time, how much goes to principal and how much goes to interest and how your balance drops. If you look at that amortization schedule, you will see these credit cards stretch out beyond your wildest dreams. Mm-hmm. It's really common for us to say to people after looking at all the debt they put in the system, oh, I see you have a mortgage, some credit cards, some student loans and a car payment. Yeah, it's going to take you 37 years to get out of debt. And they'll say, why 37 years? My mortgage is a 30-year mortgage. It's my biggest loan and I've been paying it for 10 years. Take a look at those credit cards. The hardest part about that is that unless you call the company and you get to a supervisor who knows what you're talking about and you say, I want to understand, you know, if my interest rate goes up, how do you increase my payment? Unless you can really get to somebody who understands that, you're going to get the same answer, which is, oh, well, you know, we charge you, and they just read it off the fine print.
Right.
We charge you prime plus whatever. Yeah. But you don't make your minimum payment based on that. Yes, that's what you're charging me in interest. But if you're not adjusting the payment in relation to that, it's taking me longer and longer to get out of debt because you're just taking more interest from me. And
right.
People don't understand it. And it's, I may not have done the best job of explaining it here, but I hope I've caused people, you know, some pause to think about, oh yeah, yeah, that's the problem. The other thing is, we talked about 0% cards. You could have that 0% card at for a $10,000 balance and a $200 payment. And you could actually move that debt to, well, let's do it in reverse. You could have an 18% card with $10,000 on it and a $200 a month payment, because they're calculating that payment based on your balance, not on your interest rate. If it factors in, it factors in a little bit. So let's take that idea. You have, you're about ready to play the credit card game. You have a $10,000 balance at 18% and you're paying $200 a month. So you call around and you get a card that says you can move it to 0%. It may or may not have a 3 or 4% fee to transfer it, right?
Mm-hmm.
On which you're going to pay credit. So you're going to bring your balance up by 3 or 4% and then you're going to pay interest, excuse me, not credit. You'll pay interest on top of that. But that's
right.
aside from the fact for this scenario. So let's say you move that 18% to a 0% card. Now you're really happy. You got 0%.
When and I know a lot of people that do that.
Yeah. So it may be a good thing. You're
going
to pay less in interest. But what happens if money is tight and when your bill comes in, because of the way that credit card company calculates their minimum payment, maybe they charge you 4% of your balance. And now your minimum payment has gone from $200 on the 18% card to $400 on the 0% card.
Okay, so you need to look into all of this stuff before you start to transfer stuff thinking you're going to get a better payment.
Yeah, have I numbed you with numbers? I'm sorry if I have.
No.
I just want people to understand that there's more to think about than just the interest rate. In the scenario I just gave you, are you paying down your principal faster? Yeah, you got a 0% rate and you're whacking $400 a month on it. Of course you're paying it down faster. That's great if you can afford to do it. If
right.
you cannot, you've just put yourself into a danger zone.
All right. Question. I think I probably know what the answer to this is, but I know we're talking about if you have credit and you got approved for $5,000 at a low interest rate, and then somehow you made a late payment or whatever, and they decided to adjust it. Do they ever adjust it the other way? Like your credit has gotten better over the terms of the credit card, and then they say, oh, you're doing really good. We're going to lower your rate to 5%.
I don't know that I've ever seen it automatically adjusted lower. It might happen. But I do see offers go out to people saying, you know, you've been a strong customer with a good customer with a strong history, and we're offering you another card with our company at a lower rate. And they often will switch the balance, move the balance for you from one card to the other as a courtesy. Mostly you have to ask for it. You're absolutely right about that.
And then the other question I had, oh, go ahead.
No, no, please.
The other question I had for you is just when you're thinking about getting a credit card, what would you say is a good range of rates? Like, would a red flag go up if it was above 16%, 18%, 10%? What's like the good range of like, these are good ones to get, and then stay away from these at all costs unless you absolutely have to?
That's a really good question. And again, we're looking at this from interest rate only. And so I would say, of course, you want something that has a lower interest rate, but don't look just at what the current interest rate is. Look at that fine print that says, what will it default to?
Okay.
And what is it based on? Is it prime plus 12% would be more appealing to me than a credit card that is prime plus 16%, right? Because you know what they're using as a benchmark. You know what they're using as a factor to go up. But the main thing I want you to ask, especially if you're worried about money getting tight at some point, which, let's be honest, you're not looking at a credit card unless you don't have a lot of cash hanging around usually. Right? Mm-hmm. Unless you're like me and some of the people that are out of debt who just use it for points and then turn that in for cash and make the credit card company pay you. That's always really fun.
Nice. Yeah.
Made Chase pay me last year quite a bit of money. That was really fun. But it can also be dangerous. If you don't have the money hanging around to just pay that, you don't want to get into that. But the thing that they don't tell you on those applications, and you will have to call and you will probably have to get a supervisor to find this out, is aside from the interest rate, what will your minimum payment be?
Okay.
They don't tell you for a reason, right? First of all, they don't have to because they don't know until you've applied what your real interest rate is going to be. So they can always hide behind, well, we have this factor of this and factor of that. But really, you just want to know. When I have people who are struggling and we have to move credit from one card to another, which we don't do that often. But when I have to recommend that as part of a solution, I'll ask them to look for a credit card that has this payment. And this is very dangerous. So outside of our program, if you find a credit card that charges you, let's say, 1% of the balance, so that $10,000 balance is now a $100 monthly payment, that can be very dangerous, although it's appealing, if the interest rate is relatively high because you can't get it paid off at that rate. If they're charging you 18% interest and they're allowing you a payment of 1% per month,
you're going to be paying out it forever.
Going backwards. You only get 12% in interest for the year and you're going backwards, right? So most companies won't let you go backwards. They'll charge you the interest plus a tiny little bit. But the way you beat that, and these things I wanted to talk about how you can beat this game, beat them at their own game. The way you can beat that is to use a system like ours. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry, folks. The way that you beat that is to use a system like ours where you can speed up the process. So you can tolerate that low payment, even if it's at a high interest rate, because overall you end up, most of our clients are paying less than 3%, right?
Okay.
You can use a system like this, a money management system, to beat that interest rate down to an affordable range for yourself, which is different than just negotiating, although that is one of the things you can do. So you can use a system like ours. You can negotiate. So you can call your lender and say, I want a lower interest rate. I deserve a lower interest rate. By the way, how will that adjust my payment, if at all, right?
Okay.
And really use that to your advantage. You can switch users. You can say, you know what? I'm just tired of paying you people and you're not being very nice to me and I'm going over here to this other bank. And so you can switch users. And you can transfer your balance, of course. You could say, look, I want to transfer my balance from here to another card and find a card that has some of the features that we're talking about that are useful. And also, if you're in the military, you can take advantage of that Service Members Civil Relief Act that we talked about a couple of shows ago, or that I talked about when you were away, and also the Military Lending Act. So the Military Lending Act says for active duty members and their qualified dependents, they pay no more than 36%. I know that's horrific, but 36% on loans. And the Service Members Civil Relief Act says on your credit cards, if you got that credit card debt before you became active, 6%. But you got to ask for them. You have to ask for them. And again, you know, if you want to read up on this stuff, you can just Google it. But a shortcut would be to go to the Attorney General's site and read that consumer guide, or call them and find out about it, or you can contact us. But, you know, one way or the other, I just want people to be empowered a little bit about this. Don't feel like there's nothing you can do. Go in wise, eyes wide open. I like wise eyes right wide open. Go in eyes wide open and make sure that you know not just what your interest rate is going to be, but what your monthly payment is going
to be.
And what it
means to.
Yeah.
A lot of info to take in, but all good because everyone uses a credit card at one point or another. So all of these things are things you need to know. If people have more questions, how can they get a hold of you?
Sure. They can reach us at 413-773-3333.
Perfect. You can also go to hugyourmoney.com and we'll be back again next Saturday with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Would you like to see your business on Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor? We offer a 15-year proven track record. We have limited openings, but are currently seeking sponsors and guests. Is your business a good fit? We'd like to start a conversation. Contact us today at 413-773-3333 or info@hugyourmoney.com.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor. I'm Francis Raham, the Money Doctor. Thank you for joining me today. We're going to be talking about back-to-school shopping. how to save money and how to stay safe while you're doing that online, and what to look for when you're shopping in person. So we're going to talk about how to save money, how to do this safely if you're shopping online, and if you're shopping in person, things you need to know to keep yourself from overspending and to buy the proper products. Hopefully, this will be some helpful information to you about how to save money and shop safely and get the most bang for your buck out of that annual go back to school shopping spree that parents and students are all doing right now. So first things first, shop early if you can. If you haven't already started to shop, please start shopping right away. Now, you don't usually hear me say, please go shopping right away. But in this case, I'm going to say that because we could be looking at some supply shortages. And also, if you want to get the best prices and the best selection, shopping early is one of those ways to do it. Now, I've developed an acronym for this shopping spree that I'd like to use, and you may hear this again a little later in the show, but it's CALM. Not calm like keep calm and carry on, but close. So I'm going to say CALM is careful access to learning materials and machinery. In other words, those laptops that everybody's trying to get and things like sanitation wipes or paper towels or whatever it is that you're stocking your dorm room with or sending your kid off to school with, I'm going to lump those all together and call them learning materials and machines. So when you start to get frantic and you feel like you're never going to get through this season, just back up and remember that acronym for CALM. Okay, let's talk about some tips that will help you do this safely and affordably. The first is, although about half of the people surveyed said that they prefer to shop online, the Better Business Bureau, although they still support shopping online, is saying that one of the safest ways to not get scammed and to get a good deal is to shop in person. Now, this ties into the last show we did about shopping locally. And so, you know, anybody listening to this hopefully will feel that support if they're a local business owner. But I'm not doing it for that reason. I'm doing it because when you shop in person, you not only get a face, you know they're not an imposter, you know they're not scamming you, or at least you hope they're not scamming you. But, you know, there's something special about picking something out in person. Now, again, just to come clean on this, I'm as quick as anybody else to shop at a big box store or at online. Although when I can, I prefer to shop locally. So there's a litany of things you can do. Of course, the obvious things, you know, compare prices and, you know, make sure that you're getting the best deal. I'm sorry, it is a busy time of year, even for me, and my phone is blowing up next to me. But what I would say is, of course, you want to compare prices. That's a no-brainer. I hate that phrase, but there it is. But you want to find opportunities to use things like coupons, maybe sign up for those email alerts, as much email as we all get. But those alerts might, you know, tell you that there's a special sale coming up. So think about that. Try to redeem any cash back or rebate offers that you have. And don't forget to check the store policies. So this isn't so much about saving money as it is about not wasting it and about not getting stuck in something. So store policies, what I'm talking about is returns. What if you have to return something or get a refund or redeem something? You know, is this a final sale? Are you buying a used item? Are you buying a refurbished item? So many things to check on there. You know, a lot of this comes down to common sense, of course. Make a shopping list. You know, how many times do we all say this to ourselves? And maybe we do it, maybe we don't. Maybe we make a list and that's just a loose starting point and anything we want gets suddenly added to the list. But try and make your list when things are calm. When you and your student are having conversations about what you will need, not when you're in the store saying, oh, and this looks really good. Oh, wouldn't that be good for you for school? Or wouldn't that be cute in your dorm room? So if you're looking, you know, you can spend as much money as you want on this. That's up to you. But if you're looking to cut costs or to keep things in an affordable range, a list is imperative. So not only do you want to make a list, you want to then prioritize the list. For instance, maybe the student has to have a laptop or a tablet, but they don't have to have something else that's further down the list that you thought would be particularly nice for them, but it's not a top priority. And then you can take your list, just go down them and assign a budget to them, each item. So, you know, the things that are the most important will get the highest priority for your dollars. That's how it should work. And if when you're doing your research, which you should do, of course, you recognize that, you know, laptop or a tablet is going to cost you X number of dollars, and that's a large part of your budget or a large part of your affordable fund that you're going to use for this, put it down, because it's going to remind you that you can't just keep spending money endlessly. Although you can, you're going to put it on a credit card and pay a monster interest rate for it eventually. And I'll get to that in a moment. But try and keep a list, a prioritized list, and a budget. Of course, I'm going to recommend that you do this with your student. If the student is even close to old enough to start learning about money, all the way up through college and grad school, this should be a cooperative discussion, so that they're learning by through experience and through your leadership of how this happens. Because really, people feel panicked at this time of year, like, oh my gosh, September's coming faster than we thought. Oh no, they're actually going in on Labor Day weekend, you know. You know, it's easy for that stuff to really creep up on you. And when it does, people feel panicked. And when you're panicked, you don't make wise decisions. You make knee-jerk decisions, expensive decisions. You buy way more things than you need, and you buy the wrong things at the wrong places very often, which is where I'm headed next. Okay, let's talk about shopping online. Shopping online is up 37% year over year, according to a study on that. So why do people shop online? Obviously, because it's so convenient, but also because they think they're going to get the best price. And sometimes they do. However, the scam artists out there are well aware of this increase, and they scramble to get your dollars too. So let's talk about a few things you can do to keep yourself safe. Okay. The first is, you know, check that little address in the address bar at the top of your browser. Check it for the letters https://. Okay. That S is for secure. It's going to tell you that you're at a secure website. That alone is not enough. You could be at a secure website built by a scammer, but it is one thing to look for. Okay. Another thing to check is, of course, the actual address. So here's where it gets really muddy. A lot of big box stores, and you've probably seen the ads lately about Bed Bath & Beyond has gone out of business, and you can buy all this stuff really, really cheaply from Bed Bath & Beyond. It's probably not Bed Bath & Beyond at all. Walmart is another one who allows third parties, people to sell their products, right? So when you're at a Walmart site online, it might be delivered to Walmart or it might be delivered to your home, but it may be coming through a third party that has coordinated with a company like Walmart to sell your products. Some of the huge portals are the best examples, an Amazon or an eBay or something like that. Okay. One of the things that scammers do is they grab logos, colors, language, address things that are close but not perfect, anything they can to dupe you into believing that you are on the actual website of the brand that you want to be buying something from. They are really clever at it. If you've ever gotten, you know, scammed by one of these, you shouldn't feel embarrassed about it. They're getting so good at it. I saw one the other day. I forget what the address was, but let's just say it was abcstore.com. And I saw one that was abcstore1.com. Who's going to notice that unless you're looking for it? Okay. So that's an example, obviously. So please, please be safe. I'm sure we'll probably talk more about safety here in a bit. But in terms of money saving, definitely look for those opportunities to combine store sales with manufacturer rebates, discounts, coupons, whatever. Now, if you're a student, or if you're a senior, not a, you know, a senior as in a senior citizen, then you may well have access to discounts that you're not aware of, or even places that you can shop at that are discounted. So don't be afraid to ask for these. And I'll go over some details in the second half, but don't be afraid to ask for these discounts. Flash your student ID and see, oh, by the way, is there a discount here? Even if you're a professor, you know, is there a discount for anybody with a .edu address? And you'll find a lot of places have them. I think Dell Computers is somebody that comes to mind at the moment for offering a student discount to anyone. I think with a .edu address, you can check me on that. But I'm sure there are others as well. So I'm a Mac user, so I don't always know that. But yeah, I would say, you know, one of the most important things if you're looking for, say, a laptop or a tablet, is to make sure that you're not getting yourself into trouble by not having the technology you need to run that, or overbuying what you need. So first of all, check with your child's school if they're going to be using it at school, and then check the specifications on the laptop or iPad to make sure it's going to run properly on your network at home. Maybe you need higher speed broadband to be able to really do the things that the student is going to do if they're studying at home. And the school will tell you what's required if you talk to the school about it. But that is really important. You know, you might end up being very disappointed. You buy this great, fast, you know, computer that's able to do whatever, video game creation, because that's what they're studying, and you find out that your internet speed is too slow, and now you've got to have an additional cost and a delay in time to get that internet speed up. You know, when you're researching the brands, check for the warranties and for any reviews, but look for credible places. You know, the internet is it's a great resource if you use it safely, but if you don't, it's really a dangerous place. So more on that when we come back.
Want a financial landscape you can see over? This is what it feels like to work with a HUG financial coach. HUG Your Money. So unique, it's patented. For more information, visit hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back. This is Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor. I'm Frances Rayum, PhD, the Money Doctor. And I'm here without Jess today. So I hope that I won't bore you alone, but that you'll get some helpful information. And I'd love to get any feedback you have about this topic, which is shopping for back-to-school supplies. My acronym, Careful Access. Careful Access to Learning Materials and Machinery. Machinery being the electronics that we're all so used to using, whether we're studying at home or at school. And before the break, I mentioned that the internet can be a very dangerous place to shop. And we were talking a little bit about, you know, keeping yourself safe, looking for that HTTPS in the subject line, making sure that that address bar really says that you're at the site that you expect to be at. So if you're shopping at ABC Store, it better say abcstore.com. Might say .org, .edu, depending on where you're going. So since we're talking about students, I want to cover a little psychology here, and it has to do with students and parents. When I say don't forget to ask for a deal, don't forget to say, is there a discount? There is something about that for many people feels embarrassing or makes you feel like you're inadequate, that you don't want to ask for that discount. But really, this is your money, and you are either working very hard for it and trying to make your way through school, or you're working very hard for it and trying to help your kids make their way through school. This is one of those places where you got to just buck up, okay? You got to be a little brave and put me in your pocket and say, Frances said it's not only okay to do this, it's the right thing to do. to just ask. You don't have to beat people up. You don't have to complain to them if they don't have a discount. Just simply say, I'm shopping for a student, or I am a student. Do you offer any student discounts? As simple as that. And you will be amazed at how much money you save on this sort of thing. Even things like a AAA membership will give you a discount. Has nothing to do with students. But if you don't ask for it, you won't get it. So if you're, let's say you have to check into a hotel while your kid's going back to school and you're trying to get them settled, ask at the hotel, do you offer a AAA discount if you're a AAA member? Do you offer a senior discount? You know, if you're over 65, a lot of places offer them over 55. I remember being a little disappointed, understanding that I was a senior for some places at age 50. So, you know, it's an opportunity for places to be competitive when they offer these discounts. So if you don't ask about them, you won't know about them. So no shame there. Please, students and parents, remind each other that you need to ask about these discounts. Okay. Some money-saving things that you can do either in person or online. One of them is to you know, combine your efforts with other parents or other students so that you can get a bulk price on something. Maybe six of you in the neighborhood need to buy laptops. They're all going to similar schools. They all need similar kinds of, you know, machinery, whatever, equipment, electronics. See if you can get a discount if you buy all six of them together. You might be well surprised. Ask your school. Ask the school that the student is attending. Do you have any programs, any discounts you have used or refurbished machinery that somebody sent in the last year or left here that is still, you know, operable and can be upgraded to proper use? You might save a lot there. I know. Everybody wants brand new and they want it now. But you know what happens if that's not affordable in cash? It ends up on a credit card, which leads me to talk about credit cards for a moment. So if you have to put things on a credit card, I want you to use a 0% credit card if you can find one. And I know you will want to pay that off before the interest accrues and comes home to roost. And that may be possible and it may be prudent. But if that can't happen, or if you want to see how you could still pay very low interest even after they whack that high interest on there, you can contact us and we'll help you through with that. Where a credit card is very useful is for protection. And so even if you pay the item off right away or off in a month or two, I want you to always use a credit card if you have one when you're buying things. It offers a level of protection that buying it in cash or writing a check might not offer. So if you buy, let's say we'll use a scenario where you're shopping in person and you buy, again, a laptop. Okay, you buy the laptop and there's a problem with it. Maybe the business owner you're dealing with says, oh no, you forgot to check our rules and no, we're not going to take that back. If you really run into a hiccup, you can call your credit card company and they'll jump in and help to resolve the issue. So credit cards have their place, and that's one of them, is just to really, really to offer you some protection. Now, you can also use payment services that offer buyer's protection so that, you know, if you pay through this card, you will get an extra year or two warranty or some other protection. Remember to look at those things. I mean, you know, these electronics are going to get bounced around a lot. They're going to go from a bus to a school to a dorm and back again, and things happen. So look for that buyer's protection and see if you can save yourself from a headache down the road. When we're talking about online safety, I talked a little bit about scammers lifting this information from a website. And I can tell you personally, we once had to send legal letters to another advisor who lifted an entire page off of our site. Colors, everything, just changed the header to their logo. That was it. And, you know, they do it for a reason. They do it because they're lazy. They don't want to make money, honestly. They don't have a product to sell. I'm sure that if Jess was here, she would have probably told a story about a time that she ordered something that she shared with us online one time on the air. She ordered something because the price seemed really good. It didn't seem quite too good to be true. It still was relatively expensive, but yeah, you know, this looks really good. It's a pretty good discount. And she ordered it. And of course, it never arrived. And it was several hundred dollars of an item. And there's a lot of this going on. So if you're scrolling through the internet and you get a pop-up that says, hey, you're looking for laptops. We got this great laptop. You need to, first of all, check and make sure it's a company you really know, a legitimate site, not a scammer. So try to shop for brand names for big ticket items like this, because there's a lot of scams out there, or a BBB wouldn't be talking about it. And then, you know, make sure that it is the product you want, that you're not getting duped into. I know you're looking for instance, a Mac, but we have this computer over here and we think it's just as good and it might do what you want it to do, but was it what you were really shopping for? Or did you become enticed by some ad that perhaps brought you to a scammer's website? So you give up your hard-earned money and you never get the laptop. And when we're talking about shopping for school, you just can't afford to have that happen. You need to know that those supplies and products are going to be here in time for you to start class. So again, shopping in person might be your friend here. But if you are shopping online, you can do it. Just be wary of those kinds of things. There are supply drives. Some communities are setting up supply drives. So you could check with your school, your community center, you know, your local government, and see if anybody is having a supply drive. Also, if you can afford to donate equipment, whether it's a drafting set, or it's a laptop, or it's, you know, hand sanitizer and paper towels. You know, those things are usually welcomed by people who need those supplies, which leads me to remind you that you can shop at budget places. Like if there's a survival center in your area, that money goes right back into the same community usually. Sometimes there's a food pantry there, whatever. And so think about both sides of that. How can you benefit from that? If your child is going to school far away from you, it might be good to do a little recon over there about how can they take advantage of something like a food pantry if they need it, or keep their costs down, things like that, while making sure that that it's comfortable for everybody involved. But there should be no shame in this sort of thing. This is what we pay taxes for. This is why we donate. Okay, we want people to use to utilize those programs. That's what they're there for. Obviously, I'm going to say if you can buy anything in cash, buy it in cash. You know, why pay interest if you don't have to? But first, put that credit card in the middle and then just pay it off before you have a problem. Once the charge is on the credit card, even if you pay it off tomorrow, it doesn't matter. The credit card's in the middle. They will help you if you have a problem. Not too many layaway plans exist anymore, but every now and then somebody will have one short term for back to school. But you might be able to do that. You might be able to pay a little bit a week for the next few weeks until school starts. I talked a bit about group discounts, but, you know, get a bunch of people together, see what you can do. Shop at stores that are like wholesale clubs for bulk items and split them up with other people that are going to school. You probably don't need 48 rolls of paper towels right away in your basement, but somebody else might take 6, someone might take 8. You might work that out. So I think that's really a valuable thing to remember. There are stores that offer programs and discounts that are great for students. One comes to mind immediately. I was in an Ocean State job lot, which isn't everywhere in the country. It's a Rhode Island chain and it's spread across to New England states. But Ocean State job lot is a lot like a Big Lots, or it's not quite like a dollar store, but it's a bargain kind of a store. And Ocean State job lots has something called a crazy deal. And it really is a crazy deal. It's not an advertisement for Ocean State. I'm not connected to Ocean State in any way. But as I was checking out the other day, I saw that they had a backpack program, backpack supplies, things like that. And what the deal was is if you bought the backpack for $20, they would donate a backpack, brand new, to a student who needed it. And they would give you a $20 card to spend on anything you wanted in the store. That's pretty nice from a store. And that's why they call them crazy deals, right? So that's a pretty great deal. So, you know, you could think about doing that if you're able to donate something like that that's useful to students in the area, that money stayed locally. If you want more information about this, you really could go online anywhere, but Better Business Bureau at bbb.org has a lot of information there. many of the things I've told you about avoiding scams and shopping well and all of that are from them. Of course, lots is directly from me as well, but I use them as a resource. FTC.gov, FederalTradeCommission.gov. You could look for scam alerts there and make sure that you're not getting in trouble. Snopes, S-N-O-P-E-S. If you look up Snopes, if you Google Snopes, you could say, I saw this thing. The price looked too good to be true. Is this laptop at abc.com for $200 legit? And they'll tell you the percentage of people, the percentage that it might be a scam and why. If you find any of these scams, please report them, at least to the BBB or to FTC, because if we don't report them, they just continue to perpetuate. And pretty soon, we're not going to be able to shop for anything and know where we're at. I mean, they're already spoofing phone numbers and calling you from phone numbers that aren't the real person. You're already getting robocalls from, you know, robots instead of people. And they're scamming people like crazy online. So, you know, the best thing we can do is to fight back about that. And really, that's about, you know, calling out these fake websites. But in any case, no matter what you do with this information, I just hope that you can stay away from any fraudsters. If you're shopping online, shop safely. If you're going in person, great. But don't forget in either case to check on any discounts. Check with your neighbors, pool together for some group discounts. And, you know, whatever you do, we want this to be a pleasant experience. You should be focused on the school experience and not trying to get your money back from some scammer somewhere. So whatever you're doing, whatever you're spending right now, I know you want to say, whew, when we get through this, they'll be all set. They'll be in school and we can get back to our regular expenses. But it won't happen. There will be, I promise you, there will be more expenses that will crop up that you did not see coming. And so if what you want to do is have a way to manage your money, including managing your debt, not necessarily only getting rid of your debt, although we do a lot of that. But if what you want to do is manage your money, you need to talk to a good financial coach and learn some skills that that most of us are never taught in terms of budgeting, in terms of control, in terms of debt management. Good shopping, things like we talk about on the show, but on a one-on-one basis so you can really benefit from personalized, customized advice. So I would encourage anybody to reach out to a good financial coach, not necessarily a financial advisor who often will talk to you about investments, but somebody who does, somebody who's well-versed in that basic work of budget, debt, retirement, estate planning. Somebody who can work with a team, work with your attorney, work with your accountant. If you can find a good person like that, that's, I think it's worth a lot to you. And just learn along the way and then pass that on to the next generation. So thank you for watching Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, even though I was all by my onesies again. And I hope that you took something great away from this. And I hope that the educational experience for you is just everything you hope it would be, and a wonderful learning experience. Thank you.
Confused about student loans and those parent loans? What are the options? Your HUG financial coach can help sort it out. HUG Your Money. So unique, it's patented. For more information, visit HugYourMoney.com.